Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Kate.
And this week, we've watched Return to Grace. And now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
I'm surprised that it was this episode in season four where I thought, you know what, this solidifies it. If I was on Deep Space Nine, I would take one for the team and I would assassinate Dukat. I don't care who sees. I don't care. I'm taking one for the team. I'll take the jail sentence. I'll take the sentence. It's fine. He has to go.
The international incident or whatever, the intergalactic incident is whatever.
I mean, Cardassia is collapsing anyway. Like, the Cardassia state
I'm not attached to anyone. I'm not going to bring anyone down with me. They'll think, oh, this random person. Maybe see, a I fan think, of Garrick Cloviers.
You see, I think everyone, every single member of the Deep Space Nine cast has at some point thought about just killing Golden Cat. Every single member.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see what Quark's plan would have been. Because it wouldn't have been anything useful, but it would have been funny.
It would have been banter. And instead we get Dukat, I don't know, doing piracy stuff.
Complaining about it while also trying to manipulate somebody who's actually good at it into thinking she wants it. It's
just kind of like, it's an interesting concept for an episode. Like, Dukat, who we are introduced to as this sort of the ex-dictator of Bajor at his lowest ebb, relying on the support and trust of one of the people who got him out of power.
Theoretically.
But instead we just get 45 minutes of why would you bang me?
Yeah, and they really pissed me off with making Kira entertain it, because like, and she's, you know what, I say like entertain that with like a sort of asterisk, like there's limited entertainment and then a lot of saying hell no.
She's not really
for like 45 minutes and that being ignored.
She's not really entertaining fucking Dukat. She's entertaining not being mean to him.
Yeah, she should be mean to him, John. That's the problem.
She said like fuck this. No.
She should be meaner.
And it's also like, but it's also like one of the reasons I like begrudgingly have respect for this episode, sort of, is her reaction is so like actually what you do in this situation, which is like you stroke somebody's ego. You like pretend like you're contemplating
while
also saying, yes, no, we're never doing this. Get away from me, please. I'm here for my job.
You know, this episode was written by a man, developed into a teleplay by a man, and directed by a man.
And there was one woman involved in this. And she at least got to be the one that was on screen and had control of it. Nobody could force her to do something with her face that she didn't want to do.
Well, Berman.
Well, yeah, that's true.
He probably tried.
He tried. Probably. I mean,
it starts with Kira getting a 12-course shot of vaccinations. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, there's like...
Well, she's going to this conference to share intelligence with the Cardassians, and she is like, well, there's been a massive invasion, so the Cardassian health system has collapsed, so I'm going to need to give you your shot catalogue, which, I mean...
What?
It's pretty normal stuff if you're ever going to like sub-Saharan Africa or East Asia.
But also she's from Bajor. Like all possible diseases that she could possibly have had, she was exposed to as a small child when she had effectively no healthcare.
Hell yeah, let's get anti-vaxxed with it.
I mean, I think Julian's giving her a healthy range of shots, especially. It's like...
Yeah, I mean,
podcast,
no, I agree.
We say, but, is it necessary?
To be fair, yeah, I just don't think it's realistic, but that's also like, this is the only jokes in the entire show, right?
Yeah.
So maybe like they're making some funnies about how weird space vaccines can have weird consequences.
It'd be funny if Kira was like, I had half these diseases when I was a kid, and then she just goes, yeah, well, the Cardassians somehow made worse versions of it. It's a Cardassian disease, so like all Cardassian things, it got worse.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, I don't know, it was kind of fun to see, well, I have mixed feelings about Worf, unlike some people, but it was fun to see Worf do, yeah, right. Worf say, you know, interesting things about, you know, you do actually have to be responsible for your technology and not giving it over to, because that's a real thing that really did happen and really did. And I thought it was just US, but apparently MI6 was involved too. It was like several million dollars, like hundreds of millions of dollars given to future Muslimist extremists,
oh, yeah.
Because they were going to be at this exact time they were ruining the consequences of that.
Oh, in the 90s, in the late 80s, the US mm-hmm. filled Afghanistan with American weapons. It's not as absurd mm-hmm. as for the 60s and 70s, the US and Britain filled Iran with British weapons, including top of the line British Army tanks and top of the line American Air Force fighters. And then the Shah got overthrown, and they all ended up in the hands of the Iranians. So after that, everyone's like, okay, we're not going to give weapons to anyone stupid. We'll just give it to this nice man called Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Yeah. Nothing will go wrong.
Well, and Wikipedia claims that's a myth, but I don't, like, it's a fun myth, but, like, whatever.
Because
it was hundreds of millions of dollars in the 1980s. It's the most expensive counter whatever that had ever happened. And then immediately, you know, 20 years later, we're like, oh boy.
That's just the risk of weapons exchanges, basically. It's that one day the guy you give a gun to will try and kill you. But, you know, that's the CIA. They're not competent to decision making or risk assessment. If they were, they wouldn't be the CIA. So, you know, credit to Worf for thinking maybe we should give the Cardassians access to Federation equipment. Because, you know, a season later, they're at war. Worf did one good thing. We could add on the Worf sucks, he gets 1 point taken off. So he's got, you know, 399 points left to go before he's equal.
I would rather suffer the war with them knowing that knowledge than talk to Worf for 5 seconds.
Well, the warp core upgrades that they probably could do themselves, and that ultimately at this technological period of time probably don't matter. Yeah. Oh, but that's a very Worf conversation, though.
It is. It's a very Worf writing conversation, because also it's kind of got, it has very little relevance to, well, it does have relevance to the plot, because later on Kira starts feeding Dukan information, but.
Yeah, like the Klingon.
Weak points.
Transporter codes, yeah.
But it would have been, I feel like that should have been Sisko. It would have fit more for Sisko to be like, don't you fucking give these people what they want.
But I guess it meant, I don't think Avery Brooks is in this episode, which means
no, we did a bit at the end when the bird of prey.
He was commuting to his family on the East Coast this entire time. I just wanted to have days off. Yeah, I think so. And I don't remember where I heard that though. So like, I just want him to have days off. Go home to mm-hmm. your family. Like, like, which is why did this guy get burnt out?
Yeah, no wonder.
I wonder he won't come back to us.
Oh, yeah, and the palate cleanser I was trying to watch is after this was The Muse, because it has the Loxana episode, and I was like, oh great, Loxana, that's fun. And then it opens with Jake and meeting looking at that woman, the adult grown woman who is going
Yeah, The Muse is an episode best forgotten.
Oh, is that the creepy
Jake
and yeah. So it's like, hey, you can't escape. And I bring this up with Avery Brooks because he tried really hard. And these are the things that slip through the cracks that we see to like prevent Jake from being completely like this exact episode all the time. That exact episode all the time. Like,
The Muse is grim, so we're going to go to a less grim topic, like the cat creeping on Kira by telling him how, you know how you told me not to kill my daughter? I guess. Yes, my mother disowned me. Karen took the kids. I lost my job.
I was so happy to hear all of that. I did not remember that his mother disowned him.
I didn't remember that his wife divorced him and took the kids. It's just,
I mean, that seems like something that happens like at least once a month with him. I mean, I assume that would happen in any relationship.
Have you guys seen the comic where it's like Ducat turns up on the station and asks to move in with Garrick because he got kicked out by his wife?
There's
a comic of that. And Garrick's like, why didn't you ask the reason? It's like, oh, I went to her. She just laughed for 5 minutes and then shut the door in my face.
How dare Ducat even approach the transom of Garrick's home? How dare he?
Part of the end is it's like, you're going to have to deal with the fact that me and Dr. Shit have lots of loud sex. And there's a sort of pause on Ducat. Then Ducat says, he's coming soon. And Garrick's like, yeah, I've already taken the pops.
Wait, what is this from?
It's a comic. I'll find that after the show.
This is
incredible.
Sure.
But yeah, so it turns out that Kira is being ferried to the conference by Scrain, Karen took the kids, Ducat. So,
and, you know, but it's all her fault. It's her fault. His decisions are her fault, right?
But he says it's not her fault.
Oh, but you know, he really means that too.
Yeah, he just passive aggressively said it for no real reason. Well, it actually probably is just a sympathy play. It's like, I've lost everything, and all I really want is you.
I feel like the only genuine things that Ducat says in this episode are, when I get my hands back on power, I'm going to kill all these people. And also,
yeah.
I convince that he does like the owl.
Oh, John, I'm ending the podcast right now. Sorry.
I'm convinced that he likes his daughter, but I'm not convinced that he's good for his daughter.
He literally only compliments her to like say, hey, Kira, you were right. It's literally all part of his flirting tactics. He is a sociopath who just uses her. Honestly, she would be of no use to him if Kira was not around. And it's... I do not see any sincerity.
Or he would be like, I don't know. I think because I don't think he's that actually focused on Kira. I think she's just convenient to him. So whatever Bajoran would be in her position.
Has he fucked her mum yet? Like, he's been waiting.
No, we haven't yet. Done that episode yet.
I did look that up. That's season 6 and this is season 4. So, you know,
in the timeline already fucked
in
them
the
up.
Timeline, yeah. Yeah, and while she was alive, and a child.
Yeah, he's been looking for part 2 for a while. I'm sorry.
Ducat's age math just doesn't math very well, and it messes with other characters who are more interesting / better. Well, I guess he's an interesting character.
I made that sound several times while watching this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think the first cringe moment to me is the bit where they're having dinner and Ducat's like, so I hear you're banging Shakar.
Oh my gosh.
And
but this stuff happens, this is the cold open. So this is the thing, this happens all throughout the episode too. Like, but it's particularly, that's up in the end. Like, because he's already manipulated her into, this is a culturally relevant experience that you have to have with me because we're on a, you know, you need to be multicultural and have this dinner with me even though you don't want to. And then he goes on about her boyfriend.
I love the idea that having dinner with a captain is a Cardassian sin, even when it's basically like, that's just a naval tradition.
Yes.
But it just speaks to sort of Ducat's arrogance, like, you know, on card. It's like when British people, it's like, you know what it is? It's like when New Yorkers act like bodegas are something culturally unique as opposed to just being a corner shop.
Mm-hmm. It's giving Chekhov saying everything's from Russia.
Yeah. It's like, you guys, it's like, if Sisko was captain of a ship, he'd obviously die in dignity. Kirk does it all the fucking time. You do it.
He just wants to remind her of their very personal connection, okay?
Which is that, like, I mean, you see, the thing is that Kira couldn't bang Ducat beyond all the other things, which is that if you follow the consistency of who Kira bangs in Star Trek, they're all incredibly dull.
Yes.
Ducat is a bastard, but he's not dull. You have to admit that a little bit. Shakar is a white, he's paint dry. Having sex with him is like watching paint dry, wouldn't it?
It would be. And the Vedic Brio guy was abusing his position as her religious leader when he came on to her. So to be fair, not that I want to embrace this cursed line of logic, because I would prefer, even though I don't want Pompette to exist in the 23rd century, that this is just an expression of her, like, I'm not actually that interested in men, because all these men who are not great, like, okay, I'll date them.
Yeah, that's the one I can think about when Ducat said that all the men you date are really dull. It's like, that's because she's not into men, is she?
Dull and powerful. She doesn't know what she's going for.
Oh, well, but I also don't think, like, that's him trying to convince her that he's somebody who she should date, or not date, sleep with, or something. But I don't think that's really, I think she likes having an equal, and she is a powerful woman. And because this is the 90s, we're gonna write this as, but you can't want any, I don't even know. But
well, it's a problem with Star Trek, and actually it's a problem with all media, which is that we're not meant to think Ducat's right. They can't.
Yeah.
Problem, if you want a character that everyone will obviously see as being wrong, you can't make them nuanced.
Right.
Like if you write, not every character can be Frank Burns.
And that was kind of my main gripe with the writers of this episode and like the creative team behind it, was that like I want to know. I mean, it's called Return to Grace. That's the name of this episode. Like, how much are we supposed to find this a redemptive? Like, when are we supposed to find what Ducat says convincing?
I don't think we're meant to find Ducat redemptive in this episode.
That man has never come within a mile of grace. Okay, so let's start there.
I think the point of this episode is Kira makes a choice to help him and is deeply uncomfortable with the choice she's made.
Hmm.
You know, she's made that choice because the Klingons have attacked her people.
Yes. And she is a good person, and so can work with the situation that she's in, even though... I don't know that I think that the writers were going for that. It's kind of
were going for one terrible thing, and when we get to that thing, you'll hate this episode more, but I'm saving it.
I completely accept that she was upset with her choice to an extent, but like I think the writers really tried to have some sitcom like banter between them, where really I just wanted to tell them to fuck off. Like, it's just, they did a little bit too much. But
yes, absolutely. Moving forward in my notes so that I don't talk about how awful things are. Except. This is the thing that I really hate. Z'all is just all in for her dad, who abandoned her.
Oh yeah, like, Z'all sucks.
Yeah. Well, I think everything about Z'all is like, oh well, you like to cut too much. It's also like, you're probably still running on the high of you spent 16 years being told if your dad finds you, he will kill you on the spot. Mm. And now he hasn't. And you're still on that high of, my dad didn't murder me.
But did she not know that he was going to? Has that not come up at all?
No, it does. She did know. She knew, because in the episode, when Z'all first shows up, when Ducat says he's her father, she just basically goes, the other prisoners told me if you found me, you were going to kill me. And yeah, I'm ready for that.
No, but does she know that he was actually really like, or was he like, well, like as soon as he arrived, she was like, oh, never mind. He was never going to do it.
I would say no, she's ready. Episode, no, because she has absolutely no compunction that this is the best man who's ever lived. He's never wished her ill, ever.
She seems really ready. She seems like very accepting that he is going to try and kill her. Like, she doesn't protest in that episode. She doesn't be like, please don't kill me.
You're going to kill me. Does she know that it was about to go down, but for Kira? I mean, okay. Honestly, this is the young Z'all as well. And last, a few episodes ago, I was like, oh, I didn't remember Z'all being this annoying. And then this Seattle has solidified the fact that she's kind of just
very
naive.
The thing is that they changed the actress who played Seattle twice, so they have three different actresses who play her. So it's like no one really gets to cement Seattle's character as a performer.
It's very clear that she's a plot device for how, like, you have no, like, oh yeah, this guy was going to kill me, but, you know, he's nice now. Like, he's nice to me now. Nothing? You're not going to talk about...
And
like,
they don't interpret her naivety either. They don't develop her naivety.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little later on she says something that really pisses me off, but...
It's like, if we were going with the point, Zial is naive, we'd have this developing thing and there would be a moment where the scales fall from her eyes, but they don't.
Well, yeah, because then her dad ends up killing her indirectly anyway, so...
I think, DeMar shoot her? I can't remember. DeMar's in this episode too.
Oh, yeah, and he was actually, like, helpful, which is funny.
He just fucking sucks, though.
It's Far Beyond the Stars, right, where he's one of the racist cops.
Yeah.
And I was like, that we're supposed to care about? I was not paying enough attention to him to know that he was consistent until after that episode when I was watching through. Ugh.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the whole point of DeMar is that he is a cowardly aide and that he's just like, I'm done with this shit.
Mm.
I don't think we're ever really meant to like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the sort of, it's the problem with all writing, which is that it's good to write characters you're not meant to like, but when you write a character you're not meant to like Dukat or DeMar, you also have to deal with the fact that you have to essentially assume that your readers and watchers are smart enough to figure out you don't want them to like the character. And the fact is they're not.
Yeah. Like, there's an issue there.
The fact is that most, about 30%, it will go over a lot, far too many people's heads for it to work half the time. So you just have to turn people into the stars trotting villains eventually.
Yeah. I just realized we didn't talk about... We just got passionate about this episode.
Yeah, well, there's a bit. I do like the bit where the Klingons destroy the outpost and the comms is happening, and then they can't be shitty to destroy Dukat's ship, and how deeply fucked off he is by it.
That is a truly beautiful, humbling moment.
Humbling of the Diplodocus, yes. I love to see it.
And it's a nice part of his arc, because that is the low of Dukat. That's his bottom.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't get lower than being small fry, being too much of a pointless character for a...
I think the writers later on would think that it's when, in the end, he gets what he wants and he doesn't actually want it.
Yeah.
I think that might be the lowest point of this episode. But I think that's the lowest point.
That's the lowest point of the episode. I think the lowest point of Dukat's character is him too pointless for a Klingon to kill.
Yes. Which is a beautiful thing to see, because if you're a fan of Klingon, in a way, because it's like, because so often they're characterized as like burn the ground, kill everyone, but find battles to get into, because then we can maybe die a glorious death. And this is a lot more of a realistic thing of like, why they don't, do they have weapons on this, or are they just for like breaking up, you know, why would we attack this? There's no glory or honor in this.
There's something weird about the Klingons. Like, I watched the MASH episode of DS9 last week, the one where Bashir and Jake go to the planet the Klingons are invading, and people are like, yeah, the Klingons raid hospitals and kill hospital staff and patients in their beds, but also don't attack merchant ships. It's like, wow. Are they meant to be we're meant to like them sometimes?
Sometimes?
They're just temperamental. It's, you know, no big deal.
I'm sure the temperamental defense works very well in international war crimes court.
Samuel T. Coghlan could win them on that defense.
If they don't, if they, I don't know, if they don't kill him and eat him first.
No.
Remember when Discovery was like the Klingons eat corpses?
What? No.
Yeah, no, they did it in season one. It's heavily implied in season one that the Klingons at the Binary Stars ate the corpses of all of the dead Starfleet officers, including including Prime Georgia.
What happened to the Gah? Why do we need to eat the people? What's going on here?
Maybe they're also like, aren't they religious zealots? Like, maybe that's...
Yeah, they're religious zealots then, so I guess...
Them being characterized as really bonkers for even Klingons.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm a big fan of treating like the Klingons of the TOS era, like having a Starless phase, and the Klingons of the sort of TNG era having a religious phase. It's like all societies, constantly shit.
Yeah.
But on the subject of constantly shit, so Dukat's like, I've got to get revenge on the Klingons, and Kira's kind of with him on a sort of express purpose. So they decide to take the weapons from the outpost and fit them in the freighter. And Dukat gets pissy because he's not allowed to keep his bribe, which I thought was incredible. Just being like, oh yeah, traditionally you keep a bit of the cargo, and Dukat's like, you want me to get rid of all of it? Not even my share. And Kira's like, yeah.
Well, and I like that Kira knows exactly what's happening. And so calls him on it before he can say anything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, when Dukat says all the cargo, you kind of know what he's gonna say. And Kira doesn't be like, what do you mean? She knows. Yeah, as you say, she knows, and she's like, give it up, Scrain.
Which, and then, I don't know, I obviously had a really big reaction to him forcing her to eat with him, even though she didn't want to. And it kind of, if you want to dig into this episode and actually, like, dissect it, which I don't recommend, because then you actually have to think about this episode and the meaning behind it.
Yeah, don't do that.
That is like, oh, that, you know, that kind of does put that into characteristic of, like, no, she knows Cardassian culture. She was oppressed, you know, she was occupied by them. He's just being a dick.
Yeah, he's clearly being a dick. And then there's the sequence where they're testing it, and Dukat's trying to do the whole sort of, we make a good team stuff, and Kira's just like, leave me alone, please.
This is my second bit of research that was more culturally enriching than watching this episode, because I wanted to make sure Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, was confirmed in 1991, and during his confirmation it came out that he had risen to the level of criminal sexual harassment of probably multiple women, but Anita Hill in particular, and this is credited with like making sexual harassment more mainstream in the United States. That was 1991, and this is 1995. Okay. So there's a lot of like, you guys know better, right? Like,
you gotta understand, Berman brings them back like two decades at least.
I mean, we're not meant to. It's this weird thing where we're. I don't know whether it's my reading of it, but I don't think we're meant to agree with Dukat.
Yeah, yeah. Dukat is supposed to be this narcissistic asshole who just will not let this go. I mean, I think we can at least accept that. He's a great villain. That's fine. But
traumatizing to watch sometimes.
He's not the writer's intentions.
It's the uncanny valley where he's just kind of personally evil. Like, we've all met a Dukat.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, no one meets, you definitely meet a Q, because it's just that shit, but we've all met a Dukat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just...
And a Kai-Win, and these are why they're two of the most impactful villains in the entire franchise, outside the Borg Queen, who is, I don't know, a metaphor for lots of things right now, but yeah.
Yeah.
Girl bossing? I don't know.
I mean, this isn't like, what is it, Prophet and Lace, where they play the sexual harassment for laughs.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I was going to say. Then I was like, I wasn't sure if I actually believe that. Not
no, they're playing
the
sexual. I don't think they're playing it for laughs yet, but they're not. It's sort of being treated as a regular part of the cat.
Yeah, yeah.
That Kira has to put up with to a certain extent instead of, I don't know,
calling him out directly.
All I know is at this point, the relentless flirting is very taxing. My mind is dying. And then he goes on some sort of like riff about, what is it, Golmaret? I don't give a shit.
Oh, yeah.
The Golmaret thing is like, you know, you stop fucking my wife. I just like that. I like the cat's like, you know, in times like this, I think about the man who fucks my wife.
Akira's like, I like to think about my own business. Thank you.
I like to not think about the people who are fucking my wife. It's a sort of...
Then she'd have to think about Worf.
I don't know whether it's just because I've been on my MASH binge, but it feels like a mat. It feels like if this had been... You took that and put it in another show, it could be one of the comedy bit about Ducat being mental.
Yeah, or a cuckold.
Yeah. But here it feels weirdly serious. I think we're meant to think he's sinister.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to send him to... Well, when he says he's going to send him to Breen, then that just kind of made me laugh. I was like, we don't even know what's going down on Breen. It's Maybe cold. They're all great fun.
My favourite is there's a person on... So we never hear the Breen talk. We just hear people reply to the noises they make. Mm-hmm. And there's a person on YouTube who just basically has the Breen say completely random shit. I like to mention the Breenies all sound like Scousers. Or Italian Americans.
Amazing.
I think
that's
it. Fucking what, mate? Oh gosh. I'm trying to decide what accent would be the best to give them.
I can't remember. I'm going to be honest. I have very little recollection of any characterization of the Breen at all outside.
They don't really have any characterization.
Yeah. Very cold.
Show up. I mean, walk around enigmatically.
Yeah.
What if they all sounded like really bored Germans?
I can get behind that.
They just all kind of talk in a strange semi-monotone.
I want to believe that they're secretly fabulous, though.
Well, that's the great... That would be, you know... But there are fabulous Germans, you know, we can extend this.
Like some TOS campness is behind those helmets.
Yes, they on Breen in the natural habit, they all wear William Wear Thice dresses. Yeah, there's no straps anywhere. How is it held to their bodies? Who knows?
Who knows? It's duct tape. It's
probably glue.
Yeah.
Now we get to the second scene where I can actually roast the owl, because honestly, this girl is annoying me. How old is she supposed to be?
16, 17.
17? Okay, that's old enough.
Is this the bit when she's got the rifle?
Well, this is the bit where she's like, oh, I have a hard time seeing my father as a murderer. He was going to kill you, and he was running death camps. I don't know what more you want.
And it's not even like the death camps were hidden. It's like, that's just like, yeah, we were occupying Beja and putting people in camps.
Yeah, she starts both siding genocide, and I'm like, you're done. You're done.
I wanted to give her some benefit of the doubt and say that it's bad writing, but I don't know that that's worth it, right?
I just don't think they knew. I just think they're trying too hard to make the owl naive.
Yeah.
She just comes across as stupid.
Absolutely. Like saying, oh, my father thinks the occupation was a mistake too. You're the same. Well,
yeah. Right. And I do think that this is part of the thing, and I promise I'll like move off this theme, but I do think that the 90s viewers are supposed to want this cooperation in both sides, because like it's like post-racism nonsense of like, he is an important member of a society, you do have to deal with him, like don't you have to like find a way to communicate, and sometimes when he's in trouble help him out, which sure don't.
Victims of racism, have you ever tried just like talking it out?
It's kind of like it's the weird thing where, you know, we have had episodes like Duet, which are essentially like the crimes of Cardassia are unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
on an institutional level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Duet is a brilliant episode, but there's not an episode that tries to pretend that the Cardassian occupation can be apologized for. Mm-hmm. And then you have this. And I guess that's the problem with fobbing off with writing 20 episodes a season where they're not all written by the same person. You have to deal with people not quite following the narrative you want to do.
Yeah.
Maybe I can accept this if I can just compartmentalize it as being in Ducat's weird bubble of reality. They're all just drawn into it. She's almost like, I mean, she's a victim. Like,
she's been gaslit
her entire life.
That makes sense. That's how charismatic villains are. They make people think how they think.
Yeah, so...
Well, and then also it's narcissists that are... it is also a narcissist thing, or like, especially... or people who are pulled into the orbit of a narcissist are going to have some pretty wonky, to be able to live with them, are going to have some pretty wonky, not self, like, things that go directly against themselves and their own self-protection, right?
Yeah. I'm just going to imagine sometimes she wakes up and she's like, this is all bullshit. At least has some moments of clarity that are just off camera.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah. It's like when he says, "Good catch, you're sorry for the occupation." I can believe he said that to her.
Yes.
And I can believe.
I can't believe she believed it.
I can believe he could think something to himself like, "I think we shouldn't have had to kill all those Bajorans because I think we should have ruled them in a way that they'd have liked us." Mm. But that's how his brain works, isn't it? He doesn't accept that there's a way that Cardassia shouldn't have been on Bajor. You know, he believes something like, "Oh, maybe if we'd." If we dealt with the Bajorans differently, they'd have accepted us as their benevolent overlords. As though, sorry for the way it went down, but not for the occupation itself.
What even began this? Like, why did they decide to colonize these people? What happened?
Oh, resources. It's very simple. It's like Cardassia was incredibly resource poor. Bajor was an incredibly prosperous, but militarily and institutionally weak state. The Cardassian central command was growing more authoritarian by the day, so they occupied Bajor to meet their military, their resource needs.
Brilliant. Okay.
But then basically,
at least they started from humble and positive beginnings.
Yeah, then basically the combination of the Bajoran occupation and the border war with the Federation basically destroy the Cardassian economy, so they can't afford to stay on Bajor.
Yeah, my first note for this is boo-hoo. In reference to why are we supposed to feel bad that the Cardassians are fighting a war of equals and getting their butts handed to them?
Well, I think we're sort of meant to feel bad because the Cardassian military dictatorship is overthrown. And the Obsidian Order is destroyed.
Right.
Democracy has just returned to Cardassia. Diplodocus Hydric has been relegated to a completely pointless post. And then they're invaded by the Klingon Empire, who convinced that Cardassia is run by the Changelings, so are running a semi-genocidal war of conquest.
Right.
You know, it's like, yay, native democracy. Oh no.
Oh no.
Space feudal knights. Fuck.
No.
Yeah, out of the fire, out of the frying pan into the fire, basically.
Yeah. I will let Garrick pick 5 Cardassians that I'll feel bad for, and that's it.
My favourite gag is the one where after the Cardassian War in the Beta Canon, Garrick becomes the president of Cardassia, and he basically spends all this time being like, guys, you need to put me on trial for war crimes. And the Cardassians sort of go, no.
Nah. He's like, so cute.
You have to put me on trial. And he's like, they're like, no, you're the president.
Why would he ever accept? Well, I could see why he would accept that position, kind of. That doesn't track with
It sort of implies that he accepts the position because there's no one else who could, because there's literally no one else in Cardassia who could be trusted to run the country democratically at that point.
I can see that redemption arc for him. He's a bit. The
sort of implication is he doesn't want it. The Federation isn't keen on it. He'd like to kind of be in prison.
Yeah,
but he's
paying a penance in a way because he doesn't want to be there. So
yeah,
you know,
I recommend both. Andrew Robinson's book on it and friend of the podcast, Una McCormack's book on post-war Cardassia.
I have that book. It's up there. I just finished reading it. Which one is it?
The Andrew Robinson one.
No, the Una McCormack one.
The Never-Ending Sacrifice.
Oh, no. What ones do I have up there? I can't see.
Last That's best
how bad my eyesight is. I have The Fall. What's the other one? No, Enigma Tales.
Enigma Tales, that's the other one. That's very good as well. It's the same stuff. But yeah, Una McCormack, friend of the podcast, great writer. I think we need to have her back on for a Quit Ducat episode. Or just a Cardassian discourse episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, so moving on with the episode. Oh, so they...
We have to, if we must.
Well, we have to. Well, it's not much left, really.
True.
The Klingons take the bait. Their ship gets fucked up, so Kira beams onto the Klingon ship and beams the Klingons to the Cardassian freighter and beams the Cardassian crew aboard. And Kira wants a sort of hijinky ending where the Klingons have to sort of run back to their boss and tell them how they fucked up. And the Ducat's like, you know what? This isn't Guns and Navarone. We're doing a gritty war movie, and blows them all up.
Honestly, when he did that, I honestly think he has more of a grudge against the ship itself than anyone who was on it. It's not even about the sentient life. He's like immoral enough not to care about the sentient life. He just hated that fucking ship.
And wanted it destroyed. It needed to not exist anymore. Yes. I think, yeah. Oh, man.
And then, so Kira basically, from the Klingon ship, they find out all the Klingon war plans and operations and their fleet dispositions. And she and Ducat want to go to the Klingon, the Cardassian government, and so they can fight the war. But then the Cardassian government's like, yeah, we don't want to fight it. And Ducat decides, fine, I'll fight them alone. I'll become a pirate. And
Wait, doesn't he have a real fever pitch in his narcissism where he's like, I'm the only real Cardassian left.
Oh, yes.
I am the one.
Would you like to know something terrible?
No, please.
That's based on a Sitting Bull quote.
What's that?
Oh.
Sitting Bull was the last Indigenous American leader to sign a treaty with the US government. And when he was asked to sign a treaty, and he was told, you've got to sign a treaty, all the other Indian leaders have. And he said, there are no other Indians. I am the only Indian left.
Why did you give that to Ducat? What?
But when,
and then also, Sitting Bull was like, put in Buffalo Bill Cody's thing as like this is a native person, like let's take this show on the road and like have Queen Victoria see this native person. Like this man hasn't this man suffered enough that we're going to give this Ducat?
I mean, it works. It's also like, that's where they got it from, but it's also what one of the things Hitler was meant to have said in the last his last months alive, being like, you know, there are no other Germans. I am the only true German because they lost. You know, the German people gave up, so I am the only true German because I haven't given up yet. But they based it on a Sitting Bull line, like they didn't have to.
Every day, the Star Trek writers woke up.
There's worse to come, but. Yeah, so
scared of this trivia.
Kira is stunned at what Ducat's proposing and basically is like, you're going to lose because it's just you. And Ducat's like, fuck that, I'm going to do it anyway.
And he's not going to lose because he needs her and she'll be by his side.
And she's
good God. When he said, like, I need you, I was actually like, if you're hungry, die of hunger. If you're thirsty, die of thirst. Like, you, be in want, be in need. It's not my problem. It's not her problem.
Let's see if we both agree on this, because I have it written what I think the best, and it's not even cursed because it's just bad, that is, but what are you going to say?
This bit, yeah, it's the worst bit.
Which this entire like scene that's coming up, where it's just the last-ditch attempt to get her? It's cursed.
The first time I watched this and the second time I watched this, I was surprised at how awful it just, all the way up, just terrible immediately. And I was surprised, even though I had watched it relatively recently.
she does get have a kind of a fire line though, when she's like, you know, I've lived the life that you're about to choose, and
yeah,
I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Okay, but then he also does the, I know every fiber of your being is saying no, 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 but somewhere in there, I guess, is a yes. You need to listen to it, not for my sake, not for Cardassius, not even for Bajor, but for yours.
Literally giving me the actively physically repulsing me.
No! This is like, it's not cursed, it's just bad.
It's just not okay. I do like, the best bit of that is that it's a really bad line. I think we're meant to think it's a bad line, because later on, Ducat's like, did I convince you? And Kira's like, no, not at all. He's like, not oh, I thought I'd be bit. Charismatic. And Kira just gives him a look of, you did?
There is one
again,
scene that
Nana Visitor pulling one through for the...
She's a queen. She's a queen for that.
Yeah.
The only thing that I liked about this final torturous few minutes was there's a moment where like Kira's like, okay, but I'm gonna save Ziel, like one of the first few times she's gonna save this girl's life, and then you see him like try and understand empathy for a second. He's like, wait a minute. Like, he's like, what's the catch here? No, some people have these things called feelings, Ducat, you know,
remember them.
Those.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, not yeah. So Nana Visitor pulling it through, like being there for all of us who have been in this position, and then the seeing her kind of start to mentor Ziel. These are the redemptive qualities of this episode. Everything else.
Because I'll be honest, Kira, you're a better person than I, because I would say that girl's beyond help.
Are you ready for this episode to get worse?
Let's sure. do it.
Tom Benko's original idea for Return to Grace came from the question of what might have happened if the Jews and Nazis had been forced to work together after World War II.
Cancel the franchise. End the franchise.
It's in the episode, though, right? Like, throughout this time, I was like, why are we asking this concentration, this person who lived in a concentration camp, work camp for entire life, to cooperate with the man who was in charge of it?
See, I mean, it's there. They made her entertain it too much. Yes, she said no, but they were trying to force it as well at the same time.
I can't work out if she's entertaining it or not. I can't, like, to me, it just seems like she's entertaining the prospect of fighting the Klingons. And every time Ducat's like, we could be a great team, she entertains it less and less.
Yeah, no, it's not her. It's not Nana. It's the underlying thing where it's like, this is a banter situation. Like, we can just...
Yeah.
Well, also, it's too light for what actually happened to them. You know what I mean?
And it's not... It is also not that the Federation... This is some Federation nonsense to ask people to work together. But it wasn't the Federation that asked her to do this. She's not doing this as a favor to the Federation. She's doing it as a favor to her boyfriend, the leader, the democratically elected leader of Bajor. Why?
She's not even doing, it's not like she's, the thing she's doing as a favor to him is going and meeting Cardassian government and military officials to help them fight, to help them defend themselves from the Klingons. The whole help Ducat turn his ship into a pirate vessel, kidnap a bird of prey and then wage a single war against the Cardassian Klingon Empire. No one's authorized that. That's just vibes.
That's just being trapped in a tin can with a narcissist.
Here's where you fucked up, Kira. Never do men favors ever.
Yeah, they don't need it. Also, he was manipulating her into doing it. That was the other thing. It's like, this entire time is all about like,
I mean, at least in a way, it kind of ends saying, you know, you're not as skillful a manipulator as you think. You're true. Just kind of an idiot.
Yeah. That people see through you.
Oh, God. That is just... That trivia is just... I knew it. I could feel it.
Yeah. Yes. I was working really hard to not talk about this in terms of, like, you know, comparing it directly to a Nazi thing, and well,
the here's the thing. The rightists did it anyway.
Oh.
I mean, at least the writers are like, yeah, he's evil.
Yeah.
Like, Iris even burns, like, Dukat is not a nice man. He's not a lot of he is not a sensitive man. He likes to act like a sensitive man, but he's a man of appetites to whom public image is very important, much more important than the truth. He wants to be liked by Kira as much as he likes Kira. I find him reprehensible myself.
And that's the sort of sentiments of a reasonable person. Do we have any quotes from Mark himself?
No.
Thank God.
Hans Beimler, who wrote the teleplay, said, he's always been a Nazi. In this episode, you're aware of different shades of his personality, but they're all self-serving.
That's fair. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad. I was hoping that this was the case. I was kind of like, maybe that this is one of the few times that the DS9 writing staff brought in a woman to like talk to them about things. Maybe not. But because it was, in my mind, a well done on that end of like, this is what it looks like. And then, but that's, Nana is a very good actor, I guess. And then, but I'm glad. I don't think it was executed in a way, but I think John's right that there's not really a good way to execute the. Being compelling.
I think would actually rather this, like, you know, you have to count as a great villain because they put effort into making him his evil nuanced, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have, and when you do that, when you make characters nuanced, you are essentially make a leap of faith that the audience is smart enough to pick up on it.
Yeah.
And the fact is that television audiences are stupid.
Well, and men are stupid and continue to act this way even though it's been 30 years. So, you know.
That's you can't get around that. But you should, I think you should do it anyway.
Yeah. When I was more confused about whether or not this is the morality play thing, because I didn't want to do any research about this, I was like, but this is normally when Star Trek does this. It's not a subtle thing. Racism is bad because, you know, maybe we shouldn't be homophobic but this is a lot more nuanced.
Yeah, they have to hammer it home because otherwise you won't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, for all the insults...
And we get it now. Oh, sorry.
Just like, for all the insults I hurl at Dukat, you know, no one's really matched up to him ever since. They've never had a villain as good.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, Mark basically believes that Dukat is a great guy. So, you know what? People say he's a good actor. He wasn't really acting then, was he? Easy then. He was just Dukat for 10 years.
Well, I don't think Mark Calamon.
He said he was a good guy.
No, I don't think Mark Calamon is capable of pseudo genocidal imperialism.
I'm not saying
I think Mark
that.
Calamon is not a very nice person.
I'm not saying he's going to go out and start a Dukat cult and put it into action. I'm just saying he. Let me try and think of a sort of tempered word. He was compliant enough to say
I
that
think
Dukat
he was
is redeemable
cast well
and
as
right.
a villain.
Yeah.
That's a way to describe it. He was cast well.
He was cast so well, you know, so well. But, you know, in Discovery, I was like looking at Osiris and I was like, you are nothing compared to
Osiris
what that Diplodocus put me through.
It's just gas like gatekeep girl boss criminal gag edition.
God, I hate her. And not even like a really impassioned way. Just
the talk is just I want my husband, and if I don't get my husband, I will destroy all life in the galaxy. Which sure.
I did really hate him. There's a great meme of like I love all of these gays and I hate him. And I was like, yeah.
But
that's why, because I think the writers of Discovery are really I wouldn't say paranoid, but they're really conscientious about like how like queer coding is still a thing, and to make explicitly gay people evil villains is maybe not what we want. They didn't make him explicitly gay.
They killed all their gay people, so
yeah.
Don't worry, they bring them back.
And he's dead too, so
they bring them back occasionally.
Is Parker dead?
See, the fact that they all like have a near death experience is enough. What's going on there?
They made it. They left it open ended the way they left it open ended. That well, they did. They leave it open ended that his boyfriend or husband was dead. I think what's her name? Tignataro's character was like. That's the point of what her like conversation with them was that it was. That it doesn't matter. You're not gonna even if you find a carbon copy, it's not actually the same. So I guess that's maybe an indication that his husband's dead and that he would also die in the process of trying to get to his husband. But like, I don't know.
Yeah.
All I was gonna say is I really like. I think part of it is that they don't let villains last longer than a season, and the seasons are 14 episodes. But
yeah.
And it might be one of the reasons I kind of like the Borg Queen as it is right now in Picard, as she is right now in Picard, although I have not seen the most recent episode. So, you know, flavor on that. But because of how she can be used as a metaphor for substance abuse. But like, that's not necessarily, and I think it's well played, but yeah, I don't know. And she's also not a new character. She's been for 20 years.
Yeah, well, Star Trek hasn't got, Star Trek, you know, the problem with villains is it's not got its hand on big bad since Ducat, it tries, it fails. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty good with the one-off villain, still.
Mm.
The Bastard of the Week, still quite good at that, but.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Was there any more trivia?
Not anything, that's the standard shit.
Nothing
really,
else to traumatize us.
No, there's no point. So I have to go on to the next question, which is, are we quitting? I think.
I mean, yeah. But, yeah. Like, I do have to, like, we got so upset with this episode that we forgot to talk about, like, I have quit before, and unfortunately, it was on a lot less of a suitable episode than this. Like, this should have been a quitting point, but
what did
you know,
quit
when
on
I was
beforehand?
The Dick Rock episode of TOS.
That's wait, funny. The vibes are immaculate.
Yeah.
Which one?
The I
what a little girl's made of.
Yeah, I vaguely remembered it because I was just like I was so tired of watching TOS, and I was just like, I have had to rewind this episode 4 times because I don't know what's going on. And then I was like, okay, well, that probably means I'm not enjoying it, and I do this because I like to, so maybe I can quit. And yeah, my goal was to watch all of Star Trek to that point, and at that point there was no Discovery, so it was, you know, and basically nothing ongoing, so it was an achievable goal, and I was like, or I could enjoy my soul. So I don't know that we should trust my quitting. My actual
that's
quitting.
That's the episode where Kirk has the rock dildo, right?
Yes.
So instant
and
high
I completely
art. That's
it.
Instant high art then. Sorry, you
I,
are.
Yeah, and also, and yeah, I agree. Like, objectively, I agree. I just, you know, I yeah, maybe my real life quitting is maybe not something we should, but for the purposes of a podcast, yeah, course I wouldn't have, like, I randomly came across this episode because it's like, oh, this is, I can't remember what the plot of this is, and so it might be good to watch randomly for one episode, and then it was this. So unless I would have quit this immediately if I wasn't like, well, I guess I can talk to people about it and I be less traumatized, hopefully, or more traumatized, we don't know,
we'll never know.
And did you have something to submit to the new and exclusive segment of what is
Triplets first, Olivia?
Wait, what?
This is
the Triplets first.
Okay, who decides that? If this is a new segment, maybe.
Well, on the
maybe the high art
on the spreadsheet it goes quitting.
You don't know.
High art.
Okay, well that was a declaration by John. But you know what? We've had a lot of terror today from Ducat, so I'm going to allow him to do trip notes first.
So, because I'm not going to make Olivia explain. I'll do it this week. The trip notes are our cursedness scale. The name is taken from the iconic fourth episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Unexpected, in which Trip Tucker gets pregnant. I'll let you sit with that for a second. And then gets nipples in his wrist. So that's how we measure how fucking nuts an episode is, with 0 out of 10 trip nips representing your normal number of nipples, 2, 4, whatever, how many is meant to be on your body. And 10 being nipples are going all the way up your wrists. Every time you look at your arm, there's another one. It's terrifying.
Beautiful tapestry.
So I am going to give this episode 5 triplets just for the Jews and Nazis working together point and Ducat being creepy.
I do need to just make clear, I do actually quit this episode. I'm not sure I said
that. Yeah, no, I assumed.
And the trip nips scale, how's that factor in? I want to keep the trip nips fun, but you know, this has to be condemned at the same time. So, you know, I'm going to have to give it at least 6 for that single point of the weird Nazi storyline underlying theme.
Okay. And then also, there's some really cursed things that came out of Ducat's mouth. So, I was gonna give it 0 because cursedness should be like somewhat fun, but I with Olivia that this does have to be like
it's all we have to condemn it. It's what we have.
Yes. So I say 5 as well. I say 5 as well.
Okay, so that gives us an average trip nips of 5.5 1/3 trip nipples. Mm. And high art, Olivia, take it away.
Yes, the high art segment, which I'm now making up on the spot, will be the new highlight of this podcast. Will your high art list match mine? And let's just make it clear, mine is the objectively correct one. And I will see if I will induct yours into the Hall of Fame. Okay. Let's go.
Okay. I believe that Ferengi episodes are high art. But the real one that I was really kind of surprised that has not yet been taken is Move Along Home.
Okay, no.
True high art. Bizarre stages, bizarre character design. Bizarre choices, but ultimately, except that there's a children's nursery rhyme repeated and repeated and repeated.
Except for that?
Except for
that's the best
except
part.
Except for that. True high art.
That's the best part. It was
you were so close, Kate. You stumbled with the last hurdle.
I was about to say, listen, if they release that episode today, Al Moraine, that's a TikTok dance. It's going viral. That's the new big hit, okay? That was an artistic choice that was just, you know, impeccable on the writer's behalf.
But there's no way that Paramount could actually get their PR people together enough to make that a TikTok.
Yeah, Paramount aren't good at doing their jobs. But
this is the longtime listener. Like I probably could have, but I had to be true to myself. I had to be honest about my high art, I found that unfortunately to be too many times to hear that.
While I'm devastated by your reasoning, I think, you know, this I still think Move Along Home is a hit, and I do need to rewatch it. But just from
memory, my gosh. It's great. It's truly, you know, face paint instead of having any sort of that face paint aliens. Face paint aliens is always a good choice.
Yeah.
and Quark being exactly who Quark is. But yeah.
It's at least medium art.
Oh, it's high art. If the standard is truly outrageous sets and truly outrageous character design, this is high art.
Okay. You know what? I think we can say that we have agreed here today.
Yeah.
And we have made the Star Trek community a better place by solidifying this.
Sure. Do you think to plug to the listeners, Kate? I'm sitting in the dark, contemplating.
You slowly just been consumed by darkness, which is really what happens every episode, but this is the visual element of it.
Visual, yeah. As the sun sets. I occasionally write for the Women at Warp blog, and that's, you know, Star Trekky. And I'm on Twitter at Kate_Minson, which is MINSON. And so, yeah.
Great. And if you want to find us at Quit Star Trek Pod on Twitter, or email us at iQuitStarTrek@gmail.com. Olivia has read this month's emails, we're proud to report. Look out for us going feral next month in A Strange New World.
Oh my gosh, truly. I'm going to lose my mind.
I guess personal plug, I'll be writing Trek Corps reviews of Strange New Worlds, so read those. Hopefully they're going to let me run my Camp Nonsense of the Week section.
They better.
I'm manifesting that my Camp Nonsense of the Week doesn't get cut, because that's going to be fun. But otherwise, don't be a dick on the internet. And thanks so much for coming on, Kate. We hate the cat, but we love to talk about them.
Do we? You know what? It's fine. Yes. No, we do. We do.
But yeah, until next time, folks, don't fuck Ducat's wife. No, do fuck Ducat's wife.
Wait, what was the guy's name? Edit this part.
Gol Morat.
Gol Morat, you're a legend and a king. Bye.
Bye, everyone.